You're listening to Queers, a podcast about politics and culture with Simon Copland and Benjamin Riley.
Okay. It's the 30th of November 2016. I'm Simon Copland.
And I'm Benjamin Riley.
Welcome to Queers. Each episode, we talk our way through questions on a theme, and today we're talking about corporate sponsorship of queer organisations and events.
This week has seen anger from queer communities in Australia after many became aware that Melbourne's annual queer festival Midsummer is sponsored by News Corp. Rupert Murdoch's global media empire News Corp owns the newspaper The Australian, which this year has been behind some of the most ferocious attacks against the Safe Schools program, an anti-bullying program supporting queer students in schools.
Although News Corp has been a Midsummer sponsor for 2 years, the sponsorship was news to many in the community, and a campaign to get them to drop the sponsorship has begun. So far, this has included an online petition and calls for a boycott of the festival and associated Pride March.
These responses to the sponsorship have got Simon and I thinking about what corporate sponsorship means to queer communities generally, and whether we should or shouldn't be taking money and support from companies we find ethically questionable.
There are lots of questions that lead on from this. How do we decide what is a good and not good business? And is this the inevitable outcome of a professionalisation of these sorts of events? So Ben, let's start. Should Midsummer drop the sponsorship from News Corp?
The very short answer is I don't really know. I have quite mixed feelings about the whole thing. I mean, I find them pretty gross as an organisation, and certainly what they've been doing to the Safe Schools program over the course of the year, which is just a series of really kind of nasty opinion pieces and news stories attacking not just the program but like individuals as well. I think that's been quite horrific and just kind of bullying and gross. So certainly. I mean, yeah, it's kind of, I feel like it's hard to just like talk about this without opening up all of the questions at once.
Go for it.
Oh well, I suppose to think about why, maybe it's easiest to kind of start with why I think potentially they shouldn't. I think so the nature of the sponsorship agreement is part of it. So obviously News Corp's a media organization, and it's my understanding at least is that it's not monetary sponsorship. It's largely kind of in-kind support through like running ads and listing events and that sort of thing. So I guess, yeah, I mean, I suppose that sort of makes it seem like a bit of a sort of softer relationship to me.
Yep.
In terms of what potential... I guess the question that I'm kind of skirting around, the reason I sound so hesitant about this is because I feel like implicit to a lot of this is like the question... It's like the question about money in politics, you know? Like, we say it's bad because it provides political donors leverage to... have influence on policy processes in government. And so I guess the kind of same sort of question applies here is like what power does this actually give to News Corp in what Midsummer looks like and how it's run and that sort of thing. So I think that's a big part of what I think a lot of this discussion will be. I think another kind of big question is what is the benefit to News Corp of doing this, which is probably something that we will talk about as well. But I suppose I feel like the nature of this sort of in-kind sponsorship, I would say probably means the stakes are a bit lower. So I think that's kind of part of it. It's not kind of primarily happening through the Australian. I suppose the way that these organisations are run... means that the publications exist fairly independently. I mean, we haven't seen... So the Herald Sun is the kind of main News Corp publication down in Melbourne, and it's what most of this kind of sponsorship arrangement will be enacted through. They haven't really been involved anywhere near... I mean, they run Andrew Bolt's column, and he's been critical of safe schools. But other than Andrew Bolt, they don't really have the same level of... They certainly haven't been attacking the program through their sort of editorial pages in the same way.
Yep.
So I guess there are sort of all sorts of distinctions around that. And I suppose, like broadly, I sort of would ask the question as well, I mean, why not just kind of take this stuff, you know? Like, it's... if the event and the community is kind of getting something out of taking this thing from someone that we don't like, I mean, there's an element... and, you know, I'm sort of being partly sort of facetious here, but, you know, there's an element of, like, you know, fuck them. Like, let's just take their money.
Yeah, I think you've raised some good points. I think for me, the question has always... the question has focused around what does News Corp get out of this? And, you know, you talked about the power that News Corp may have over the shape of the event. I suspect it's probably very little in that sense, except probably to access to events and all that kind of stuff. There'd be parts of a sponsorship deal that would provide that. I think what it does give them, though, is a potential, I guess, cover for them, and sort of an act of almost being able to sort of be legitimate within the community. So it's you know, their logo would appear on all the sponsorship pages, and I'm sure there was probably elements of it that they would have logos in particular parts of the festival, and you know, that is something that companies do in these sorts of events, is to provide support so they can look like a supporter of the community. Now, I think for News Corp it probably made a lot more sense a couple of years ago, before the Safe School stuff really blew up.
Yes.
And what seems to me, so I had, when I had originally read this story, sort of read it in the framing of this being a new thing, but understanding it as a thing that's happened for a couple of years, it makes much more sense of something that happened before all of this blew up, and now people are sort of becoming aware of it and going, well, you know, the last year things have changed. News Corp has been, you know, the Australian has been particularly ferocious in their approach in the last year.
And it's important to say that that's very much happened since the last Midsummer Festival. So Midsummer Festival is... about a month and a half, it starts, and all the kind of Safe Schools attacks have happened since, like, in between these two festivals.
Yeah.
So the timing does kind of make sense.
Yeah. So the timing makes much more sense to me, and I think noting that some of the response to Midsummer has been really fascinating, as if it's, you know, as if they're signing up to this new thing and betraying the queer community. And at sort of Midsummer, I can see a little bit going, oh, a bit caught. You know, we're just continuing on a partnership we've had for a long time or for a couple of years. So I think if you go back to it, there is the question of, you know, why did News Corp sign up to that in the first place? It's because it provides them with a good look at this point, at a particular point in time. And the question for Midsummer and for the community is now, given what's happened in the last year, do we want to continue to allow them to have that good look? Do we want to allow them to continue to have that image? I suspect the reality is that it's not going to work for them this year, in that whilst the sponsorship of Midsummer in the past may have been good for News Corp, I don't think, given the backlash, it's going to be a net positive for News Corp. So I'm a little bit less concerned about it, because people are aware of what the Australian is doing.
I mean, I feel like these kind of questions are to some degree moot, because, like, these sorts of... when you talk about the kind of benefit to corporate sponsors of these sorts of events, the benefit is only there if we're not really talking about it, or if we're only sort of talking about it in a positive way. It's not like they get some sort of abstract benefit from having their logo on a bunch of stuff at Midsummer if everyone's talking about how shit they are.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the reality here, and I think that that's why I'm, I guess, less concerned about it.
Totally. I mean, there's also a possibility that they'll pull the sponsorship. I mean, I think that's more realistically what these sorts of campaigns have the potential to achieve, whether we think that's a good outcome or not, is not so much pressuring Midsummer to drop them, but, you know, making it, as we've said, I guess, not worth it for News Corp to maintain this relationship.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued, I guess, about... what News Corp is thinking in this sort of situation, and thinking about coming back up to, I'm not sure if they had to renegotiate the partnership or just continue it on, coming back up to this point where it's, you know, the midsummer's coming up, and whether there was any ever questions about whether this is the kind of thing that was likely to occur. Because from my perspective, it seems pretty inevitable that people would get upset about this given what's happened in the last year.
Sure.
And it seems like a funny sort of, and I suspect what's happening here is what you're talking about before, is the differences between the different parts of the organization and the different newspapers and the different media parts, which, you know, you would probably have people in the corporate sponsorship team, wherever in News Corp, who would be very different to the editorial team in The Australian, and would probably have very different politics.
And not just that, but like, you know, my background's in journalism. I have a lot of friends who work and have worked for News Corp. I have friends who work for The Australian, you know, who are journalists for The Australian. You know, there's been a kind of interesting, almost like backlash to the backlash from a lot of those journalists, a lot of them queer, who are saying things like, you know, that they're proud that the organization is sponsoring an event like this, because they see it as like a genuine sort of engagement and something that the community does genuinely get something out of.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think it's an important thing to note. But from my perspective, it doesn't necessarily mean that we should continue it on either.
Sure.
Similar stuff with, you know, there are queers, you know, and I've sort of had this question down below, but there are queers in the police, but I don't think that means we should allow police to sponsor events while they continue to engage in violence against queer communities. Mm. I think it's a similar sort of analogy, but I don't think it's quite the same. But, you know, I think that for an organisation like Midsummer, we need to look at the overall benefit of receiving that money, or receiving that in-kind sponsorship or whatever it is that they're receiving, and whether it gives too much coverage to News Corp. I don't think it is giving coverage to News Corp at this point in time, and I think that in that sense, like the deal is not really benefiting anybody, and in many ways the best option is just going to have to be to drop it or to end it because of that reality. But, you know, at the same time, I think there is a question about whether companies, and I think this is the bigger question, it's not just one related to News Corp, but related to companies as a whole, of whether, you know, should we, you know, how does an organization like Midsummer decide who it should be taking its money from and not? You know, what is the value of that? You know, as a non, you know, sort of, how do we value the different money that we're taking? You know, and what do we, how do we make those decisions as queer organisations, particularly in a space where these events are becoming more professionalised and require more money?
And just kind of corporatised generally in terms of like how they're run, you know, like as in the kind of internal structures as well as what the events actually kind of look like on the outside. You know, this isn't just a question about the kind of requirement for funds, although, you know, that's part of it too. It's that, you know, maybe I'm kind of jumping ahead too far, but, you know, that not-for-profits are increasingly functioning, for all intents and purposes, like corporations. I mean, even in terms of, like profit models, basically, you know, that we talk about kind of growth and sustainability around not-for-profits, which is insane in a lot of ways.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that given that space, and this is the sort of thought has been formulating in my mind, this is the kind of inevitable outcome of that situation. We spoke ages ago when we spoke about the Telstra thing, and just to remind people about that was when Telstra, the telecommunications company, sort of momentarily dropped its support for marriage equality after a sort of campaign from the Catholic Church. We spoke about how big businesses sort of don't have an inherent queer-friendly approach necessarily. It's based on the market at the time and what is beneficial for them and what is beneficial to their model, to their business model.
They have an imperative for profit, and that's what everything is about.
Yeah, and so I think that when we see the corporatization of not-for-profits, what you're going to see is an inevitable outcome of doing deals with companies who at the particular point of time, it's really good for them, but then later down the track, that might change. Mm. Or, you know, and organizations like Midsummer being stuck in this thing where where once it was a good idea because you know maybe News Corp looked good, but then it's not. And it would have been the same, I think, if it had been Telstra, for example, where once it looked good and you know to have them you know on the thing, and then maybe it didn't all of a sudden because their imperative changed. There is no inherent pro queerness just because an organization signs up for a sponsorship, and it can become very, very difficult. But I think there's also there's that element, but there's also the element of questioning whether the sort of business approach to nonprofits means that they also, you know, when you become focused on things like growth and sustainability, does it mean that some of the values of the organization, to put it in the best way I can find, gets lost out towards having values of how do we grow and how do we maintain our budget bottom line, et cetera, et cetera, so that you end up being forced to take money from people that you might not like.
Sure.
In order to survive.
It's funny, I think I would kind of reframe that slightly. Because I think the answer to that question is absolutely yes. You know, like clearly we have seen like, you know, many, many examples of the ways that organizations have certainly their values have changed from what they perhaps initially were on the basis of the involvement of I suppose, you know, because of those imperatives of kind of sustainability. The interesting question for me, and I feel like it relates to sort of both of those areas, is how we justify it. Like which companies, for example, do we decide are good or not? And what kind of criteria do we use? And you know, like which values do we decide are worth keeping at all costs and which don't we? Because I think the reality is that this stuff is like, it's inevitable. You know, this stuff is just like kind of going to keep happening and going to keep getting worse. I'm fascinated by the way that we as a community sort of reconcile ourselves to that. In both of those instances. I mean, in a lot of ways, News Corp is kind of a bad example because if you look at a company like, a publication like The Australian, to compare it to the episode we did earlier about Telstra, like The Australian is entirely unprofitable. It is an explicitly kind of ideological weapon of Rupert Murdoch. I mean, and that's basically all it is. It kind of weirdly
not a sustainable
falls,
business model.
it weirdly sort of falls outside of the kind of, you know, profit morality in inverted commas that we've talked about that companies make decisions on. And just kind of imagining a sort of like in a weird sort of parallel universe, that's actually kind of admirable, you know, in that. Like, to imagine a company like The Australian an organization like The Australian as, like, a kind of ideal that we might like to kind of replicate in the queer community as something that is financially sort of safe and therefore can just do, like, can fulfill its morals in whatever way it wants to, which is basically what The Australian does. It's a very kind of maybe twisted way to think about it, but...
No, it's an interesting way to think about it. And I think you're right that it makes The Australian in this instance a bad example because they have the capacity to do what they want to do and to continue on and to not lose that profit motive that I think that other companies have the problem with. But I think going back to that question of like, how do we make decisions about what is a good and what is a bad company to take money from? Like, do you have any thoughts on what, on how do we approach that? How does an organization like Midsummer or, you know, or Mardi Gras or you know, any pride event really take that, you know, approach that?
I mean, the problem with a lot of these sorts of questions is that as soon as you start to pick it, I mean, that's why they're so good, you know, as soon as you start to pick at a question like that, you quickly sort of unravel really kind of large systemic problems that we have. You know, if you again look at kind of money in politics, you know, the Labour Party decided some years ago not to take money from tobacco companies, for example, and that everyone can kind of look at that and go, okay, so tobacco companies are bad, so we don't take money from them. But like, how about like big banks? You know, everyone takes money from the big banks, and Midsummer takes money from the big banks as well. From I think NAB are a major sponsor of Midsummer, National Australia Bank. You know, banks do some pretty awful stuff. You know, they are kind of the sort of primary architects of like the kind of every a lot of what's shitty about capitalism. They force people into debt. They invest in shitty stuff. You know, like banks. I think we can probably broadly agree banks are pretty bad. So why not banks? And you know, if we kind of follow that thread, you know, I don't know why not. You know, any of the companies that sponsor these events.
Yeah, and I think that is the important thread to follow, and I think this is the difficulty of this. And you see, like, different campaigns around these issues all the time. So, you know, I've been involved in climate organizing, which is focused on divestment from fossil fuel companies and of treating fossil fuel companies as the same as tobacco companies, effectively, is sort of been a lot of the messaging around that. And you do hear that sort of, well, what, you know, what's going to be next? What company is next? You know, and, you know, does this mean banks? And does this mean, you know, what, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If we're talking about, you know, coal companies, so we have to do gas companies as well, and do energy providers, etc. You know, in queer communities, does this mean, you know, for example, I think there'd be a lot of stuff around alcohol companies. Does this mean ending sponsorship with them? And I think that there are genuine questions to be asked about that. And, you know, alcohol companies, for example, use queer communities quite a lot as a way to
market. Oh, totally. They're huge sponsors. Now. And not only at a kind of large scale, but at a really kind of small, you see, like, grassroots community events all the time sponsored by alcohol.
Mm. Yeah, and it's they do a very good job of making their products look very gay, you know. And I think I've just gone blank with the vodka company's name.
Absolute.
Yeah, because you know they do RuPaul. The time. I knew you would know. But you know, with their rainbow bottles and all of that sort of stuff, and it makes me feel a bit icky, seeing that kind of stuff. You know, not that I've got a problem with alcohol, but just that, you know, these companies are not generally nice companies. But you know, they get cover by sponsoring our events.
I want to kind of dig into what you mean when you say cover. Could you expand on that a bit?
Well, so for example, the Absolute one is a really good example. I don't know much about Absolute, but the kind of cover they get is, you know, well, actually, let's go back. We can, you know, in the divestment campaigns that I've been involved in climate organizing, a lot of the stuff we talk about is companies using sponsorship as a way of having social license. So companies, you know, you see this a lot in the UK recently, where there's been moves to get things like museums and art galleries, etc., to remove their sponsorship, to end their sponsorship with fossil fuel companies like Shell and BP, which you see quite a lot in those in the UK in particular. And what the argument is that there's a social cover that's given by being able to sponsor a good organization. So it's looking at things like events that are, you know, events, sports teams, art galleries, museums, things that people have a lot of faith in communities, things that people enjoy going to. And companies use this as a way of saying, look, we're a good company because we support this organization, or we support this event, or we support this museum, etc. And it just gives a social cover that makes it harder to question the practices of what that company does, you know, in other parts of the world. That's how I think companies operate within the queer space. I don't think companies are sponsoring, you know, queer organizations and queer events, you know, from the goodness of their heart. And I think you would probably agree with that. I think that what it is that they're fine, you know, there is a benefit for them. They don't just do it for niceness. They do it because there's a benefit for them. Mm. And the benefit for them is looking really good in a growing market, you know, acknowledging queers as a, particularly in places like Australia, is increasingly having more wealth and more capacity to spend money. It's about looking good in this growing market.
Totally. And social and political capital as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm interested in your comment about not doing it out of the goodness of their own hearts, because, I mean, I think Broadly, that's true. But when I think about, for example, the people I've seen who work for News Corp who are kind of saying that they're proud of the sponsorship of Midsommar, I feel like that's a really kind of good illustration of how it's not entirely true to say that they're not doing it out of the goodness of their own hearts. I think systemically that's true. But I think the reason this stuff is so pernicious and successful, ultimately, is because it uses, I mean, and this is true of kind of a lot of sort of systemic problems around capitalism, basically, is that it kind of uses the illusion of agency of individuals as a kind of cover for systemic ills, you know. So you have, like, essentially the whole existence of, like, corporate social responsibility as a thing and as, like, a team within a lot of organizations. Like, a lot of people go into that and engage with that as something that is genuinely positive, that they feel good about, and that they, you know, there would be people within these organizations, queer people within these organizations, for example, who are, like, fighting for their companies to sponsor these events and when these companies may not always want to. And so it can kind of look like this moral thing at that level. The problem is that at a kind of systemic level, it doesn't operate that way. The moral imperative is different. But I think that gap, the fact that those systemic forces can operate while we as individuals feel like we're doing the right thing is important.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just thinking through it. Did I have a puzzled look on my face?
it was more. I felt like I was just saying the same thing over and over again.
No. I think that there's like I don't know. The way I'm just thinking about it is that you have the reality of people living in a system of capitalism and trying to do the best they can in that system to do good. And in cases like this, you have individuals and you might have individuals high up in these sorts of organizations who say, you know, the best thing we can do is to sponsor an event like this, and don't necessarily just think of it as the doing it from the goodness of their own, you know, sorry, don't think of it just as a thing that's good for the company. They think of it as a way to do good in society as well.
Yeah.
And I totally appreciate that and totally understand it. I don't hold that against people or say that that's a bad thing that people are doing that sort of stuff. I think that that's actually good. And I think trying to survive and do the best you can in the system we've got is actually a really good thing to do. What I would argue is that I think from a company level, and so that's different to the individual level, and you would have individuals in places like News Corp who would be pushing for companies to sponsor these sorts of events and to support these sorts of events. But I think from a company level, it's very unlikely that you're ever going to get that sort of agreement unless there's a benefit to the company as a whole.
Yes.
Now that exactly. benefit may be at times we have to keep our staff happy, and so this is what we'll do as a way to look good. But I think a lot of the time here are all these other benefits of how this looks good for the company in the long run, how it can benefit the company. And I think organizations need to be aware of that, aware of what we're giving companies when we take the sponsorship on. You know, what are their motives to achieve this? And are their motives pure? Probably unlikely. Are their motives more, you know, do they have a bunch of stuff that benefits themselves from doing this? Potentially very likely. And is that a benefit we want to give them? Do we want to give them that benefit? I think at the moment, potentially for News Corp, I don't think we do. But I think that they've lost that benefit already, so I'm not so concerned about it.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I mean, it's tricky because I feel like that as a sort of, you know, quote unquote rational way to think about this stuff is good, but it's also largely unrealistic in the sense
absolutely.
You know, we're talking before about the corporatization of not-for-profits and corporatization of the queer community generally. The answer to that question is almost always going to be take the money, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, except in instances where, like, well, I don't know, we couldn't even really identify any instances, you know, other than, like, tobacco companies or, like, oil companies who by and large are not sponsoring these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd find it hard to think of an example of where an organization kind of comes down on the side of, like, you know, we have someone's offering to give us money we think that our event or our program is a really good thing for the community. And because we're not just talking about arts festivals here, we're talking about like often kind of organizations that provide like services to the to the community as well. And how do you kind of weigh that up? Like, say, I mean, this is a hypothetical example, but say you get like a offer of kind of corporate sponsorship from a bank to run, say, like a kind of drug and alcohol service or something like that. I mean, like, how the fuck do you weigh that up, you know, when you kind of go, like, yes, we can acknowledge that there are these kind of huge systemic problems that we're invested in tackling and we're invested in kind of dismantling this stuff. But at the same time, you know, we also have to get through the day and get through the week and get through the year. And a lot of people don't have the luxury of engaging on that level.
And is the benefit of this program outweighing the negatives of giving, you know, said bank, for example, the positive outcomes that they've received, you know?
Totally.
You know,
particularly when those positive outcomes are so abstract or the sort of negatives of that are so abstract when you compare it to, like, even, say, the enjoyment of going along to a midsummer event.
Yeah, exactly. So I totally agree with you that it is not an easy calculation to make. And I think and that is why you see people saying yes far more often than they would say no. And I totally understand that. I also think, however, it is how we're going to end up in more situations like this where you see, you know, people, the backlash to it when people see an organization they don't like. And I think these sorts of, and that's why I think that these sorts of instances are inevitable, that it is the inevitable outcome of the professionalization and corporatization of queers in a broad sense, but of our events in particular. And I think this is the inevitable outcome. I think it's unfortunate. I don't know how to get out of it. And That's I mean, I think we could potentially go into that, but we might be running out of time.
I feel like that's a kind of, I'm just sort of trying to imagine, I don't know, like what, I'm just thinking about like genuine kind of grassroots activism in queer communities and what I can think about now that is sort of, like, can we imagine a way to do a queer community without this stuff? You know, to kind of, can we think of examples of
I think the best example I can think of is last year I went to the Glasgow Pride event when I was in Scotland, and there was a side event called Free Pride, which was very specifically anti-corporate in its approach, so it didn't take any money from its from corporate sponsors. So the Free Pride people marched in the Pride March as a block, and then had their own event following the Pride March. What happens in the number of different Pride events I went to in the UK is that you have the Pride March and then it goes to some, like, it's almost like a festival, you know, kind of like a fair with rides and, you know, stalls and music and stages and all that kind of stuff.
Sure, which outside. Is, you know, Midsummer has that.
Midsummer,
well.
Yeah, okay. So I haven't been to Midsummer before. So like that. So instead of that, having that, they had their own event, which was smaller, inside of a community event with music and food that you could buy and stuff like that. It was great. I really enjoyed it. But it is, I don't know, it's a very different sort of event. It would mean having a very different sort of space and having a very different sort of community and one that I think lots of queers would not want to participate in. Now, it was good for me and I enjoyed it. And I think I probably enjoyed it more than I would have if I'd went to the main event, because it was more aligned to my values. That is the inherent part of it, I guess, that it is about there are different value sets, and one enjoys the more professional style of event, and that's sort of where a lot of these things have headed. And it means changing how we would vision these sorts of events to be able to do it in a different sort of way. And I understand.
I would also say that, like, it's not just about kind of what we, like a kind of different aesthetic, I think that part of, you know, I think that those sorts of events like the Glasgow Free Pride can necessarily only exist on a small scale. I think this is kind of partly, and this goes to some degree about conversations we've had about like what is community and what can kind of community look like. I think that there's an element of a lot of this that is about size, you know, that as we've gone from a community of thinking about community as something that is where people sort of know each other and it's about like interacting and having those sort of like shared bonds, which is kind of what I would argue a community is, to thinking about LGBTI people as a demographic, you know, things kind of increase in scale, and to just engage with society on that level in terms of things like permits and having a space and, you know, equipment and OH&S stuff. Like, you need to be a corporatized structure to be able to even engage on that level. So, you know, growth is kind of not just a concept at the level of companies. It's something that sort of, like, filters through our conception of community.
Yeah, and I think... And part of that is also it's a change of the direction of such events. You know, if you think about a lot of the organizing that was mass organizing in the 60s and 70s, it really had that political outcome, that political aim. So it was much easier to deal with that sport corporate sponsorship because it was about mobilizing people to come here and demand a particular thing. Whereas if you're thinking about things like Midsummer and Mardi Gras and similar events, it's now more about a celebration and having an event, and that political message is often secondary. And so you're not mobilizing people to come to demand something, you're mobilizing people to come to an event to enjoy themselves. And that has its positives in the fact that, you know, there is a lot to celebrate and there is a lot of things that we want to enjoy and we want to have a good time.
Sure, and you can, I mean, I think you can also kind of make the argument that that is a political act in a way.
But I think it's much less explicit than it was. I think it is political act to an extent, but I think for lots of people that is not the main outcome as much anymore. Yes. That means, or that's not the main reason they would go to it.
Yeah, no, sure. We should probably wrap up. The only other thing I wanted to mention was I just kind of had the thought that you know, that when you don't have corporate sponsorship, it means a lot of kind of like labor on the part of the people organizing it. But then I was like, but there are like heaps of people who are involved in Midsummer who work for free. I mean, it's an organization that's built on volunteers for a start. And you know, the main kind of carnival day is, I mean, it's also an arts festival. So a lot of the people are performing, you know, for very little money, but even on the like carnival day, which is the big sort of fair festival thing, there's like a bunch of community stalls representing different organizations. Most of them are not being paid to be there. So I think it's, you know, I just sort of imagined an argument in my head and then shot it down in that, you know, that not having this corporate sponsorship would require people to work for free, but the model we have requires people to work for free anyway. So
Yeah. Should we wrap up there?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with another episode in 2 weeks.
In the meantime, you can catch us on queers.podomatic.com or subscribe to us on iTunes. And as we say every episode, please leave us a review and rating, which will help other people find us.
Yes, and it's, I should add here, because I've had conversations with people about this who didn't quite understand, it's not just about like writing something so that people can kind of look at it and go, oh, that's a review of a podcast I would like to read. I mean, that's part of it. It's also just having the reviews on iTunes bumps us up the rankings and makes it more likely that we'll be seen. So it's also about like playing with iTunes algorithm. So even if you have time to like jump in and just like click 5 stars and say, very good, ! Hopefully you would click 5 stars. That even that is like super helpful to us. You don't need to spend a lot of time on it. Although it's lovely if you do, of course.
Yeah.
You can also in the meantime find us on Twitter. I am at Ben C. Riley.
And I'm at Simon Copland, and you can catch me on Facebook at Simon Copland Writer.
That's it for us. We will see you next time.
Right. Looking forward to it.